here's a story from The World.
It's been nearly 6 months since the U.S. Capitol was breached. Just yesterday, the House of Representatives voted, mostly along party lines, to create a select committee to investigate the January 6 attack. Two Republicans joined 220 Democrats to create the panel. The storming of the Capitol also pushed the Biden administration to create a national strategy to combat domestic extremism. The move has been praised but also criticized. As The World's Rupa Shenoy reports, many worry that the strategy could lead to targeting of Muslim Americans and people of color.
After the September 11th attacks, the U.S. government began to surveil and infiltrate Muslim American communities to find people planning more violence. One they identified was Palestinian Sami Al-Aryan, a Florida professor. He was arrested in 2003 for having ties to a U.S.-designated terrorist group. A jury failed to convict, and he was later deported. His daughter, Lina Al-Aryan, remembers their family being surveilled for years. She recently spoke at an online discussion about surveillance.
From the moment that we would pick up the receiver, actually on our landline, it would start recording. And we're a house full of people and five kids. Some of the time the phone would be knocked off the wall and it would just be off the hook for a while. And it would be recording everything that was going on in the house.
That kind of surveillance happened across the country. In 2008, Muslim Americans in Southern California told law enforcement about suspicious new mosque members promoting violence. They turned out to be FBI informants. Three Muslim Americans sued, attempting to get the FBI to share the information it had gathered to prove that they were targeted because of their religion. That battle is ongoing. Just last month, the U.S. Supreme Court agreed to weigh in on the case. Amar Shabaik is the managing civil rights attorney at the Council on American-Islamic Relations in L.A.
These actions, the surveillance and the spying, wasn't based on any sort of suspicion of criminal activity or anything like that. It was really simply for the fact that these individuals were Muslim.
The surveillance and infiltration were part of a larger strategy that at one point was called Countering Violent Extremism, or CVE. The basic idea is to recruit community leaders, social workers, teachers, and public health providers to help identify people who might commit terrorism. CVE's many critics said it was a way for the government to target and harass marginalized communities. But the strategy evolved, says Javed Ali, who held senior counterterrorism positions at the Department of Homeland Security and FBI.
There were cases in the 2010s where the Bureau, having opened up some kind of investigation on someone who potentially could have either been radicalized, and instead of just arresting that person, they actually thought about off-ramps to arrest and perhaps getting those persons help that they needed.
Still, some officials regret aspects of CVE. John Cohen works on threat prevention at DHS. He spoke in June at George Washington University.
I have to say, and I've been saying this publicly, and I know it's going to raise some eyebrows, is that while there were great intentions, some of the assumptions we based that approach on were flawed. CVE was based on the approach that individuals who were high risk were coming from specific religious and ethnic communities. That's one of the things we found to be not true.
Despite that, the Biden administration's new plan to combat domestic extremism includes a version of CVE, like working with social service organizations and mental health and education professionals to identify potential terrorists. This year, the Biden administration is giving $77 million to state and local governments to combat domestic extremism, and it wants to up that to $131 million next year. Cohen says this time they've made a crucial change. Instead of focusing on people of a particular religion or ethnicity, they'll look for people with certain behavioral characteristics.
What we're doing now is very different. We're leveraging what is more like a public health approach, where we understand that there are behavioral characteristics, there are social characteristics, there are individual characteristics of individuals that make them more vulnerable to being influenced by extremist content that they're seeing online, make them a higher risk of using violence as a way to express their anger.
But the government's own studies have found that it's really tough to narrow down the characteristics of people who might commit terrorism, says Harsha Panduranga. He's with the Brennan Center's Liberty and National Security Program in New York.
A lot of the conditions that I've identified, whether it's being socially alienated, having a grievance, being depressed, having mental health issues, These are conditions that millions of Americans experience.
He says leaving things broad and vague like that gives local law enforcement wide latitude.
I think that the degree that the potential flagging of people as those who could turn violent is so open-ended, that's inevitably going to lead to bias seeping into the process. And we know who's typically affected by that.
So as the Biden administration goes forward with its plan to combat domestic extremism, Muslim Americans like Lina Al-Aryan, whose family was surveilled for years, now find themselves in the unlikely position of defending white extremists who may fall under suspicion.
Although we don't like their views, they may not necessarily have ever carried out the plot that the government concocted.
She argues that in the U.S., even people suspected of extremism should be treated fairly. For The World, I'm Rupa Shenoy.